Welcome to the Writer's Weekly Podcast, a forum geared toward the writing enthusiast and those who want to make money from their writing. I'm Brian Whidden, Managing Editor of Writer's Weekly, and I'll be your host along with Angela Hoy, the creator of Writer's Weekly and President and CEO of BookLocker.com, a full-service book publishing company. Whether you want to learn how to become a professional writer, how to find writing gigs, or even publish your own book, then you come to the right place. We'll be discussing all kinds of topics relating to the writing and publishing industries. Don't forget, you can also click over to writersweekly.com. There, you'll find not only thousands of articles about professional writing, you can also find current paying markets and job listings to help you boost your writing career and even your bottom line. But for now, let's get on to this episode of the Writers Weekly Podcast. Writers Weekly Podcast. I'm Brian Whidden, and I'm here with the star of the show, Angela Hoy.
You just have to stop saying that.
No, I don't. Okay, well, how's everybody doing? Glad you joined us again. The last episode, we started doing our news from the home office, things that happened to us here at home, and this week's news from the home office is going to be two apologies from last week. One, I listened to last week's episode, or last episode we did, episode 4, in my truck through my speakers, and I realized that the audio was not very good. I'm still learning how to edit audio and master audio and do all this stuff and work with microphones and everything. So if you bear with us, the audio is going to be getting better. It is a learning curve. But I realized apparently I was too close to my microphone and I didn't make the adjustments right. And things were a little too loud and a little too soft. So we're sorry about that. Also, last week we did not put out an episode, and again, we apologize for that. However, it was a difficult week for all of us. I had a death in the family and had to drive down to Florida for the funeral on Angie's side of the house. Her extended family, they got some bad news for a family member. There's been a lot of travel on that end, and that's about all we can go into on that. But we apologize for not getting an episode out last week, but that is the reason. We were just too busy doing traveling and all kinds of other stuff to get to it.
Perfect storm of family problems.
It was definitely a perfect storm.
Tragedies. So, yeah. But we're back.
We're back, and we're ready to get on with today's subject, and we've named this one Memoirs and Lawsuits.
It's a good one.
And this is based on an article that Angie did some time back, but the information never gets old. Sometimes it evolves, but it never gets old.
We've actually, in writersweekly.com, we have several articles over the years because we received so many questions from authors about this touchy subject.
Indeed. And each year we receive, and this is at Book Locker, we receive several manuscripts from authors who want to publish their memoirs. And many of these tell of relationships and experiences that didn't go well. However, what a lot of these authors don't seem to understand is that these stories that they tell involving other people can result in legal hardships for them. No matter how true some of the things in a memoir are, if they embarrass or shine a negative light on people, this can open the author up to civil liability. And today we're going to discuss ways that an author can mitigate their risk of becoming a defendant in a defamation or a libel suit.
We're also going to have some examples, some from best-selling books that resulted in lawsuits, and a couple of examples of authors we know who have had problems.
And Angela, since you run the ship of BookLocker.com, you want to give us a little disclaimer here?
We are not attorneys, and what we discuss in this podcast should not be construed as legal advice. Again, we're not lawyers. What is said here is based on our opinions and experience having published books for over 20 years. You should always consult an attorney if you have any questions about your manuscript possibly attracting lawsuits or anything regarding your manuscript that could lead to litigation. Again, we're not lawyers.
Great job of extemporaneous speaking. Congratulations. That didn't sound read at all.
Thanks.
Well, when it comes to the legalese, it's probably better just to read it word for word anyway.
That's so, right. Yeah.
Yeah, we ain't lawyers. We can't tell you exactly what's going to happen if you ever get into court. That's what a lawyer is for. But we can talk to you based on the things we've seen over the years.
Share our experiences.
Yeah, sure. So, Angela, what are some of the things that somebody can get sued over when it comes to a published tell-all book?
Well, what you'll always see is invasion of privacy, libel, defamation. Basically, anything that you write about someone that they don't like can result in you sitting in a courtroom and paying lots and lots of money in legal fees. Even if you win, you still have to pay those legal fees if you're in the United States. Also, a lot of people think that all authors and publishers are rich. And some family members will come after you because they're gold diggers and neighbors and friends. So always keep that in mind.
So, Angela, for for anybody that doesn't know, can you give us the difference between libel and defamation and anything else that falls into that category?
Well, invasion of privacy is when you tell a secret about somebody that they don't want other people to know about. Okay. If it's embarrassing. Even if they think it's embarrassing, other people don't, it's still, you know, an invasion of their privacy. Libel is when you write something about somebody that they think is not true. That isn't true. Libel is when it's not true. Slander is when you say something about somebody that's not true. So if somebody's interviewing you about your book and you say something in the book, well, then now you've got slander going on too. Defamation basically means defaming anybody, saying something or writing something incorrect about them that they think is harming them in some way.
Now, I'm going to expand this a little bit. We have a couple of examples in here where authors were sued for coming up with a character that was based on somebody claims that you built that character on me. In other words, I was the basis of that character and I didn't give you permission for that. What does that fall into?
That would be libel.
Libel.
And defamation, depending on, you know, which are invasion of privacy. So, for example, if I write a memoir and I write about, let's say, this is an actual example. A woman wrote about her four college friends and she turned it into a novel. She changed everybody's names. She changed lots of different details. She changed locations. However, and she even wrote it under a pseudonym. But she was so proud of her book, she was telling people that she wrote it. And word got around, and one of the girls that she went to college with contacted me and was not happy with the way she was portrayed in that book, even though it was a different name. I don't know that what happened with that legally later. As far as I know, the book is still for sale. That woman was very upset. Mm. So just because you fictionalize it doesn't mean you can't get sued. If anybody can recognize you or anybody in the book, or if they can recognize somebody else and they tell that other person about it and that person doesn't like what you wrote about them, even if you fictionalized it, you can still end up in court.
So you've had lots of experience trying to explain to authors what they're risking by publishing some of the things that they write. And what kind of responses have you gotten from the more obstinate folks that you deal with in this?
Well, my favorite one is, I don't care if I get sued. And I'm like, I care.
Yeah.
Because I could get sued too.
A lot of people seem to think that if you get sued and you win, it's no problem. But they forget the fact that once you get sued, you have to hire a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no guarantee that somebody's going to be made to pay your legal fees.
Yeah,
so even though you might win.
Yeah, we're getting, because it varies by country.
Yep.
It varies by if the lawsuit in the United States is considered like frivolous.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of different factors. But if it's a civil case and somebody sues you and you still win, it doesn't necessarily mean that other person's going to pay your legal fee. You have to pay your legal fees. also, there's no guarantee even if you win that person can afford to pay your legal fees if they're ordered to do so.
I was going to point that out. Yeah, even people that sue somebody and win, then it's up to them to collect that money. It's not just automatically transferred into your bank account, especially if the other person doesn't have it.
Right. I have an example, and it was about libel. We exposed a scammer on writersweekly.com. He issued several threats against our family and our children. He filed a lawsuit in a different state. He'd already been declared a vexatious litigator in California, meaning he would just sue people to harass them. And he filed a lawsuit in Arizona simply to harass us. We won. It was thrown out of court. He was ordered to pay our legal fees, and he disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
So it happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Other things that some of these authors are saying to you when you tell them, don't publish that.
Oh, everything I wrote is true. Okay. I can't be sued. This is the best one. I can't be sued. Another thing is I warn people about in Writers Weekly. If your lawyer says you can't be sued, be very careful.
Mm-hmm.
Because how much more money is the lawyer going to make from you? If you don't get sued, he makes nothing. If you do get sued, oh boy, he's got a whole new case. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm not saying all lawyers or even most lawyers are like that, but there are lawyers like that. They will lead their clients into litigation. Another good one. I don't have any money, so suing me would be pointless. Well, if there's a big judgment against, first of all, you have to pay those lawyer fees.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's a big judgment against you, they can come after your assets,
and
depending on the state
can,
and the country, of course.
Garnish your wages.
Yeah.
They can intercept, I believe, they can intercept any tax refunds you might have coming back from the government.
That really depends on the type of lawsuit and
okay.
and what court it, what the court says.
Guess that would
so
be a question for a lawyer then.
That,
yeah.
Again, we're not lawyers.
But again, yeah, they have ways. A court can attach things to your assets to that means you can't do anything without paying this person.
Well, our lawyer told us after the Arizona case, he said, again, this is a scammer we exposed. He was just a piece of dirt. He said, we can get a court order to go into his office and seize his computers and sell those assets.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, I think, $10,000 in legal fees that he was supposed to pay us. Well, we heard shortly thereafter that he was arrested for aggravated DUI because he had his kids in the car with him, and we just dropped the whole thing. We just walked away, so it wasn't worth it.
Kind of makes you wonder why we keep chasing around these scammers,
right?
And exposing them.
Episodes 1 and 2.
All right, and the going back to the people that say, well, you know, I don't care if I get sued, and I don't have any money, so it doesn't matter, but the author's not always the only one getting sued, is it?
That's true. They can sue your publisher. They can sue your editor. Anybody who worked on the text of your book, they can come after. And you need to remember that when you're thinking, I don't care if I get sued. Well, trust me, the people that worked with you on your book, they do care if they get sued.
And I've seen that come across the messages, too, is people who you will explain to them, you can get sued for this.
Yeah.
And they're like, just publish it. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And then you have to say, no. We can get sued for it as well.
Right.
And sometimes I've seen you just downright have to put your foot down with somebody and say, listen, this is our business.
Mm-hmm.
And because they'll tell you 3 or 4 times back and forth, no, just do it. It'll be fine. No, just publish it. And you have finally had to say, this is our business and we're not going to risk it over your book.
Well, what I tell them is, you know, I understand you want to tell your story, but is it really going to be worth it for you to spend weeks or months in a courtroom
mm-hmm.
paying legal fees? And it's not worth it to me because I am putting my entire business, my thousands of authors, my employees and contractors at risk. And I'm not going to do that for one book.
Yeah.
So when I do hear those kind of snarky comments, I don't care if I get sued, or this is another one. If you get sued, I'll pay your legal fees.
Yeah, right.
Uh-huh. No, you won't. No, you won't. So I do put my foot down on these because it's not worth it in the end. Mm-hmm. And I know some authors are, I may be getting ahead of myself, are very emotional and they're angry when they write a tell-all book or something.
I think that, yeah, the reason we see this pushback on these books especially is because they're so into wanting the world to hear their story.
They got an axe to grind.
A lot of them do. They
yeah.
just, it's like they well, nobody else has listened to them for the last 20 years, so now they're going to write a book and make the whole world listen to them, and then that starts clouding judgment.
Yes,
I think. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Let's move on to what are some of the things that an author can do to limit their exposure to potential civil liability when they're writing their memoirs, their, you know, let me tell you about my childhood, all this kind of stuff.
Well, if they're writing about somebody who's, you know, still alive and they want to include that person in the book, they should get a release from that person, mm-hmm. all the people in the book. In writersweekly.com and under this podcast on our website, I'll post a link. We have an article about this topic, and there is a sample release on the website. Of course, you need to have it reviewed by your attorney, signed and notarized before you use it, but there is a template release that authors have access to.
And if you have doubts that somebody who's still alive would sign that release for you to tell the things that you're telling in your book, it's probably an indicator that you shouldn't be writing that particular part of the book.
Right. Yep. Leave them out of the book. Yep. We'll get into more about that later, too. Another thing authors can do to try to protect themselves, nothing's foolproof, mm-hmm. is to change the names of everybody in the book, of course.
Well,
or anybody. Well, if you think you're going to make one person upset and you write about other people and use their real names in your book, those people might tell that person whose name was changed,
yeah.
you know, what, 6 degrees of separation? There's only a matter of time yeah. before that person finds out they're in your book.
Okay. All right. So you want to change names of people that are in your book because you're still telling your story. You're just people who got different names, and the people reading your book aren't going to know anything about, you know the difference.
Yeah.
What else can they do?
Don't just change their names, change their descriptions. If it's really, really inflammatory, change the gender of that person. Change
locations.
Your
6'2" dad that you're going to say beat you up all the time and all that needs to turn into a 5-foot woman.
5.5-foot stepmother or step-grandmother.
There you go.
I mean, if you think about it, even if you change these details, the story is still basically going to be the same message for mm-hmm. the readers. So everything doesn't have to be 100% factual, especially when you're trying to protect yourself. You may be, you know, in protecting other people.
Yeah. In a lot of these, and correct me if I'm wrong, but they mostly, mm-hmm. these manuscripts, a lot of them are going to have childhood abuse,
yeah.
sexual abuse, domestic abuse. It always somehow, there's some kind of somebody mistreating somebody.
Mm-hmm.
If you're writing a book about how great your childhood was and how amazing a family you had and how you love your parents even today, then chances are you're not going to have any problems with that. So that when we have to step in and say, wait a minute, it's usually containing these kinds of things.
I actually have an example about that I'd like to throw in. We were going to talk about it later, but it fits that perfectly. An elderly gentleman wrote his memoirs,
mm-hmm.
and it was a wonderful story about his family and being a father, all the lessons he learned being a father. Super sweet man. I got an email from his daughter. He included in his book that she got pregnant when she was 16. She said that was invasion of privacy, and she did hire a lawyer. Now, she just went back and forth with her dad, didn't involve us.
Yeah.
But he had to change his book because he embarrassed her with that one line.
And that can happen. Absolutely.
So you have to be really careful. And again, if you're going to write about somebody, give them your final manuscript and get them to sign a release to protect yourself. And if they won't, take them out of the book.
So when you're talking about just changing descriptions of people, this falls back into what we were discussing towards the beginning here. If somebody can recognize themselves, even if the name's changed,
mm-hmm.
based on a description, they can still come at you
Absolutely.
And say, oh, you were talking about me and you said I did all these horrible things.
Not only if they can recognize themselves in your story, but if somebody else knows
yeah.
who you're talking about, that person, not the person, the person that you wrote about
yeah.
that said, you know, the negative things can still turn around and sue you.
Because now they can show that somebody else, based on your description mm-hmm. of them, believes that they did whatever you said in the book. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you're going to go through those, through changing names, may as well change some descriptions as well. Yeah.
Change descriptions of the people. changed locations of where the incidents happened. Change descriptions of, you know, use different city names. Again, it doesn't take away from the core story. Basically, fictionalize everything and write under a pseudonym and put a disclaimer on the copyright page saying, you know, loosely based on actual events. And
I remember when you were helping me write my book, and it was about a lot of my experience as a cop and many of the stories that I told, true stories. But I did change characters, names. I did change locations because cops have great memories when it comes to the calls they were on.
Plus, they like going to court.
Just describing a location that, it, you know, somebody who was there could be like, hey, I remember that night. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we actually changed several things in my own book.
In your book, Blue Lives Matter, The Heart Behind the Badge, had a lot of really positive stories, like about the guy that you and your friend, cop friend, pulled out of the airplane, the burning airplane.
All right, so we've talked about changing names of characters, change description of people, change locations. What other things can we do to help mitigate these circumstances?
I know that it feels really good to finish a book, and I know you want to put your name on it and tell everybody about it and put up a website. Look at me, look at me, look at my book. I totally understand that. When you're writing a memoir, you need to write under a pen name. And that's.
But how will people know that I wrote that book?
Too bad. You're going to have to check your ego at the door. I mean, would you rather have, you know, your name on your book, which could end up in a courtroom, or would you rather use a pseudonym and just privately promote your book under that pseudonym and not have to worry about the legal consequences? Again, nothing is foolproof. Mm-hmm. You can do all this advice and you can still get sued.
Well, and anybody who may be listening to this looking to write a tell-all book, that one, writing under a pen name, is just giving you all kinds of heartburn. That may be a good indicator for you to stop for a minute and ask yourself, why am I really writing this book?
Exactly.
What is my actual motive? You don't have to tell anybody. Sit down and do it for yourself, within yourself, and ask yourself, what do I really want out of this? Would you rather just write the best book you can and sell a lot of copies and make some good money from selling your book? Or is it more important that everybody knew that that was you and heard this tale you're going to tell them? Then ask yourself, why is it so important that everybody hear about this part of your life that you're trying to tell? What do you think folks are going to get out of that? Or is it all about you getting a lot of people feeling sorry for you or giving you recognition?
Good point.
And sometimes the old adage, check your ego at the door, goes a long way. And this could save you a lot of pain and heartache down the road.
Stress, lost sleep, gray hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's writing under a pen name can definitely help protect you. And again, I personally, I mean, just, you know, my own point of view, I'd rather sell a lot of books under a pen name than get one lawsuit under my real name and have to deal with that.
It is true that a lot of authors have egos. They have the self-confidence to get a book on the market, and they want people to know they wrote the book. I mean, it's a big accomplishment. It's something to be proud of. But when we're talking about memoirs or any book that might expose you to any kind of legal liability, you really need to use common sense on what you're doing. And I've told our kids this 100,000 times. When in doubt, don't. If you've got any question in your mind about if you should do something, don't do it until you've done all the research and figured out what could possibly happen because of that.
Well, that's why in my life I've seen a lot of trouble and had a lot of adventures because I didn't have that when in doubt, don't.
I know. You had to wait till you met me. I know.
You had to slow me down a little bit.
You had talked about people write memoirs to get back at people.
Yeah.
That is very common. In fact, a lot of authors with those big egos will tell me, I'm doing this. I'm going to send her a copy and she's going to, you know, I'm just going to stick it to her, or, you know, my mom abused me and I'm going to send her a copy because she deserves to see what she did to me. That is the wrong reason to
you
write
have literally
book.
Had authors tell you that they're going to make sure to send a copy
Absolutely.
To the person that they're trashing in their book.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Because they
well
want to get back at them.
May as well just hand a magazine of ammunition at the lawyer that's going to be shooting at you.
Right.
I mean,
just go ahead
gave
and start
them what they want.
Emptying
yeah.
your bank account because
wow.
your lawyer's going to need all
wow.
that money. Yeah, right.
Amazing. I have not seen one of those yet. You'll have to show me next time.
Yeah, I've seen quite a few over the past 25 years.
Okay. How about accusing people of crimes? What if somebody committed a crime against you?
Oh, okay. That happens.
Mm-hmm.
I know from your cop days that you would arrest people and they would never get convicted of something because of a variety of circumstances. Mm-hmm. If you accuse your friend Martha in high school of stealing fingernail polish from CVS and she never got caught, it's your word against hers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, never. If somebody hasn't been convicted of a crime, don't write about the incident. Just don't. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're just asking for trouble.
And if they have been convicted of a crime, you need to be real careful about how much detail you go into.
Do you know how much prisoners love to file lawsuits from behind
mm-hmm.
bars? Boy, they just, a lot of them just make
And there's
make
a lot of lawyers happy to
hobby.
Do it for them. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's one thing to say so-and-so was convicted and sentenced to X number of years for this crime. But if you start trying to go into details about how that crime was committed or things that they did during the, you know, any of that, you get something wrong. Now they've got you.
Yep.
They can come at you and say, I got convicted of a crime, but I never did this and this that he said that I did. And he's,
and that was,
and
not
he's
part
libeling
of the
me.
Yep.
Yeah. And you'll notice if you ever read, true crime stuff or even just, you know, news articles, the word allegedly
oh, yeah.
is slapped all over everything. You'll never hear a reporter say, so-and-so did this. Mm-hmm. It's always witnesses reported. Detective so-and-so stated in his report that the defendant did X, Y, or Z.
They were arrested for allegedly.
Allegedly
dot,
doing
dot,
this
yeah.
or that. A good reporter never, ever lets it look like they're the one saying that somebody did that. And it should be the same thing in your memoir if you need to mention somebody having been convicted of a crime. Be very careful how much detail you go into on that.
In our In the News column in writersweekly.com, just a week or two ago, we talked about a major media outlet that did not use the word alleged or allegedly, and they lost a multi-million dollar lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
And this gentleman in particular is now suing the Associated Press and another outlet, another major news outlet.
Was that the Navy vet that was taking people out of Afghanistan?
Yes.
Okay, yes. And he had all these reporters constantly saying he's a scam, he's a fraud,
he was human trafficking.
He was human trafficking.
One.
Now,
he
that
wasn't.
Was all their opinion. But they stated it as a fact.
Well, the
and
first...
he's already won one big lawsuit against CNN, and
yep.
now he's going after Associated Press.
And
yeah.
I can't remember the name of the third
and
one, but it's a big one.
One. Yeah.
And from what I read in just a couple days ago in a follow-up article about the new lawsuits he's filing,
mm-hmm.
is CNN did a segment, and then another media outlet picked it up and acted like what CNN said was completely truthful, and they kind of
mm-hmm.
worded it the same way. And then another one did. There's probably more.
Mm-hmm.
And he can go after every one of them, and that is just lazy journalism.
Yeah.
And just because somebody told you something, you read something, you want to put it in your memoir, you better darn sure make sure that you've got your facts in order and that you've got proof.
Yeah. That's the other thing. If you're going to say that somebody did X, Y, or Z, you should have some kind of documentation, some evidence, something.
Yeah.
To be, but again, do you even want to be in that situation to have to produce that in a court of law and show it to people and hope that they're going to believe you? You know, it's best avoided.
Yeah.
It really is. And like we said, people that are writing their memoirs, even if it's a good memoir, it is an emotional pursuit,
mm-hmm.
I think. And sometimes we got to be careful when you go into those negative places, telling the bad things about your life, that you not let your emotions take over your writing. It's okay that you felt the emotions that you felt, but explaining an event in your life or an experience, if you're a really good writer, you know how to put those emotions aside and explain it in a way that if you can put yourself in the shoes of the reader and listen to whether or not you're sounding too much like a whiny butt, shall I say?
True.
Yeah.
And you know what? When people do write memoirs, I love reading memoirs. Mm-hmm. I like the ones that show somebody going through hardship and coming out
better in the end.
Better in the end. Coming out on top in the end. And teaching readers what they learned from their experiences. The ones that are, I got railroaded by this person, I got screwed by that person,
and my life still sucks.
And my life still sucks. There's just, what's the positive message that brings forth? And don't get me started on the prisoners who write memoirs about how they've been railroaded by John Doe cop, you know. They'll name every judge, every lawyer, every district attorney, every cop, and they'll expect us to publish their side of the story.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah.
No.
Exactly. What else can we do to...
Well, we talked about fictionalizing things and writing a novel based on actual events, loosely based on actual events, and changing everything, including your name. But the number one rule, never, ever, ever write about your ex.
Don't ever write about your ex. Okay.
I tell you, that's most of the memoirs that we receive. There's a bunch of dirt about exes.
Somehow they got a way of finding out you wrote that.
Oh, absolutely. Because your ex probably knows somebody who knows somebody who knows you, who's going to know you wrote that book. And trust me, if it's that bad between you two, they're coming after you. Mm-hmm. There's no shortage of lawyers that will file frivolous lawsuits left and right.
And let's say everything in your memoir is true. All the bad things you said about your ex or your parents or your siblings or some guy that railroaded you. Is that a foolproof defense against libel and defamation?
Sure. Can you prove it? Can you prove it all? Your book can be 100% accurate and you can still get sued for libel.
So let's go over some of the examples that we've pulled up.
This is the good part.
This is the good
part.
Good part
of the podcast.
This is where we say, "See, we told you so."
We save this for the end. Yeah.
Angie,
several examples.
You and I sat for days and days and days and wasted lots of hours of our lives watching the Amber Heard and Johnny Depp defamation trial.
Yeah, that was a we lost several IQ points that week.
I think I gained about 20 pounds in popcorn. But it was a spectacle. It was
a spectacle.
It kept us riveted to the screen.
Oh, absolutely. It
definitely
did. It was great.
And I am not starstruck. Personally, I don't like either one of them.
Yeah.
I think they're both kind of cocky and conceited, but it was very interesting to see how this unfolded.
I liked Edward Scissorhands.
That's a character, though.
I know, I don't think I've actually seen any of his other movies, but
listen,
that one was adorable.
I like Captain Jack Sparrow, okay, but I still don't like Johnny Depp, all right?
All right, let's move on. Before we get sued.
Now, this isn't a memoir. Nobody wrote a memoir here, but it did cover liability. Let's talk about them real quick for anybody that may not have sat through that whole trial and know everything, but Johnny Depp, Amber Heard, of course, actor and actress, they met and got married. Well, they met in like 2007, I think. Got married in 2015, and they divorced in 2017, January of 2017. Amber Heard, shortly thereafter, filed for a domestic violence injunction on Johnny Depp. And I didn't write it down, so I'm not going to say whether she got it or didn't get it. But she did file for a domestic violence injunction. She did not file criminal charges on Johnny Depp, to the best of what I've been able to research. And I know that he was never arrested or prosecuted or anything for domestic violence charges against Amber Heard. So in 2018, just a year after her divorce, Heard wrote an op-ed, and in that she claimed, and I'm quoting, 2 years ago, I became a public figure representing domestic abuse. Now, notice that she didn't say, Johnny Depp beat me up. Mm-hmm. She didn't say, my husband was abusing me. Her words, and I'll read them again. 2 years ago, I became, and this was in 2018, so she's talking about 2016, during the time she is married to Johnny Depp. 2 years ago, I became a public figure representing domestic abuse. So Johnny Depp, reasonably, I think, said, clearly she's talking about me.
Sure.
And he sued her in 2022.
Because she didn't have to name him. She said 2 years ago they were married at the time. Everybody assumed it was Johnny Depp, of course.
And again, she didn't even have to say the words. She just indicated that she had become, quote, a public figure representing domestic abuse. Mm-hmm. Heard claimed.
This was after she got sued.
After she got sued, she says, no, I wasn't referring to him in the op-ed. But then most of the trial, when we were watching her, she was trying to convince the jury that Johnny Depp did, in fact, abuse her, which I don't think helped her case at all.
And the reason he sued was because he lost a lot of job opportunities after she published that op-ed.
People stopped hiring him. In fact, they canceled
One of the projects he was on.
They canceled one of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies because of this.
Right.
Yeah. So he claimed.
Yeah.
And in the end, Depp won. She had countersued him for $100 million, whatever. But basically, in the end, he won $15 million judgment against her. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a great example of how, if you're not careful how you word things, it will come back and bite you.
And this was an op-ed for, I think, a magazine or a newspaper that she wrote in.
Washington Post.
Yeah. Well, she learned her lesson.
Yeah. So you got to be careful what you say.
She was not able to prove to the jury that happened, and he won. Should we move on to the next one?
Yep. So a book came out back in 2006 called Ugly, and it was written by an author named Constance Briscoe. She is a British lawyer, or was, because I happen to know some other news that came out about her. But now her book actually sold over 500,000 copies. And in it, she claimed that her mother regularly beat her, starved her, and abandoned her at age 13. She claimed that her stepfather did things like putting a cigarette out on her hand and was also violent. She even claimed that she needed surgery to repair some damage from her mother's abuse. In 2012, 6 years after the book was published and sold over 500,000 copies, mother sues her in court in England. So you're looking at, you know, how much money did she make over those 500,000 copies? And mom waited 6 years, but then she finally jumped up and decided to sue her daughter. One of the tragic things about this case is all of her siblings apparently aligned with mother to say that the abuse never happened. Now,
well, even when authors write memoirs, if a family rift, obviously there's already one if they're complaining about something in the family, it's going to cause that rift to become much bigger, and family members are going to take sides.
Yeah, things get ugly.
Yeah.
Now, she did end up winning the case. The author did end up winning the case after a 10-day trial. And apparently in England, I read that she did not have to pay legal fees because that's how the system in England is.
Yeah, in different countries, not in the United States, if you win a lawsuit in the United States, the other side does not necessarily have to pay your legal fees. But it's my understanding that over there, it's the opposite.
Yep.
So,
however, I mean, that's 10 days you got to spend in a courtroom. That's all the stress of, gee, if she wins, is she going
to
take all my money?
Well, it's months leading up to being in the courtroom.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, very expensive. Months. Yeah.
So why is she not a lawyer anymore?
She was later on put under investigation for telling some lies. She actually became a judge.
Really?
In England. And I only scanned over this story because I'm like, wait a minute, is that the same person? Yeah, same person. Became a judge. Had something to do with some friends wanting some they speak differently there, so I'm not 100% sure what they were talking about. Something mm-hmm. about ticket points,
which
I'm assuming means traffic tickets. I don't know. Hmm. And that she did some things during some cases that were questionable and got questioned or got investigated by the big wigs.
I'm going to be Googling that after we're done here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I didn't even read far enough to find out exactly what the disposition in the end was. So I don't want to defame or libel her.
Mm-hmm.
I just, that's what I read. But apparently she had some trouble afterwards. Yeah.
Okay.
You want to talk about the next one?
Okay. The Help. I didn't read the book, but I really liked the movie. Today I made Brian watch a clip from that. It's on YouTube. If you go to YouTube and type in The Help movie, Pie, P-I-E. Trust me, if you haven't seen it, you don't want to miss it. Don't do it while you're eating dinner. Author was Catherine Stockett. Hope I'm saying that correctly. The book The Help was published in 2009 and sold 7 million copies. Abilene Cooper, A-B-L-E-N-E, Abilene Cooper, was a housekeeper who worked for Catherine Stockett's brother. She later claimed that a character in the book was based on her. Now, this was a novel. The movie was fiction. But this woman claimed that the character was based on her, and she wasn't happy the way that character was portrayed. And she sued for $75,000. Now, the case was later dismissed because of the statute of limitations in that locale. But again,
lucky for the author, because she didn't have to go through the
lawyer's fees,
of finding out whether or not this person is going to convince a jury.
Months, that and you can bet she probably would have sued for more if, you know, based on the movie, if she'd been able to win that.
And again,
I'm just speculating.
This book is not a memoir. However, it is an example of how you can wind up at the mm-hmm. wrong end of a legal situation.
Yeah.
If you're not, you know, I'm sure she had no intention of bad-mouthing anybody in this or being spiteful in it, but it still came back with a lawsuit.
Well, again, I'll repeat, some people think that all authors and publishers are rich, and there's no shortage of lawyers that'll go after them.
Well, 7 million copies, she's a lot richer than I am right now.
You haven't sold 7 million copies of...
Not yet. Working on it.
Okay.
Working on it. You want to read the next one? I think you listed this one.
Well, I actually told you about this one yesterday when we were talking about this subject. Running with Scissors. I did read that book. That was a really good book. Extremely interesting. The author, it was a memoir, and it was kind of disturbing. The family, so he wrote about his psychiatrist and their family, and his family.
Okay.
The family, who were the subject of Augustine Burroughs' memoir, Running with Scissors, settled a lawsuit against him and his publisher, St. Martin's Press, for defamation and invasion of privacy. The family alleges that the book falsely portrayed them as an unhygienic and mentally unstable cult, and that Burroughs had fabricated events and conversations. The settlement included changes to the book's acknowledgments and the author's note, according to the New York Times and the Insurance Journal. So, he didn't allege that these people did anything illegal. He simply wrote about them being unhygienic and mentally unstable.
Basically said my family was crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the family of the psychiatrist that was treating him.
Okay. Help me out here. So he wrote about the family of the psychiatrist that was treating him, not his family?
Yeah, because he went to live with that psychiatrist for a while.
Okay. Sorry. I thought he was talking about his family.
No. This was the psychiatrist's family. So this, in my opinion, again, I'm not a lawyer, sounds like a if they're unhygienic and mentally unstable cult, they could be claiming that's libel,
mm-hmm.
or maybe it's invasion of privacy if they didn't use deodorant. I don't know.
Yeah, and it's all going to depend on what a lawyer can prove and what a jury believes. Because basically, if they prove that it's untrue and it was written, mm-hmm. now you got libel.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And the last example we have is from one of our authors, who I will not name, of course. In his book, he wrote about a neighbor. It wasn't anything negative about the neighbor, but I found out later his family and the neighbors didn't get along. The neighbor contacted us, and I, of course, gave him the author's contact information. No, I actually gave the author this person's contact information, asked the author what's going on. This is another risk of making people angry with your book. He didn't sue the author. He went on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Better Business Bureau, you name it, on all these websites, and not only trash the author's book, but trash the author and his family.
Great.
And believe it or not, Amazon wouldn't remove that negative review. And it was mostly about the author and his family. And after late, I mean, some people will get so mad, they'll go online under several names and post several negative reviews and trash your book just to try to put your book, you know, bury your book. So, but that's, yeah, that's the last example. That
in the hearts and the minds of the people. There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you're going to write a memoir, you're going to talk about your life and the people surrounding you as you were coming up in the world, you need to be very, very careful about what you write and how you write it and whether or not you're naming people.
And never write about your ex.
And never write about your ex. Got anything else for us, Angela?
That's it for today. Okay. I think we covered quite a bit, and it was kind of some juicy stuff there. But again, if you have legal questions, contact a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And there are lawyers that specialize in libel.
Yeah.
And actually, I know of a firm that does that. So if you go to writersweekly.com and click on the contact me link at the top, I'll send you the link to that website.
There you go. And if you want to know anything else about making money off your writing, click on over to writersweekly.com. And there's articles there that'll tell you all about making money from your writing, earning a living from it. Do you also have current jobs and paying markets where you can get yourself a paying gig, get paid for your writing? If you have a manuscript that's been sitting around and you want to make it into a book, or you've just gotten done writing it and want to make it into a book, then contact booklocker.com. And that's Angela's book publishing
If it's
company?
A memoir, they might be afraid to contact me now.
Go ahead and send us your memoir manuscript, and we'll check it and let you know
even
if it looks like you're in trouble.
Even if we can't publish it, we still want to read it.
That's right. We still want to read it. We want to find out what you have to say about your neighbors and your kids.
And your ex.
And your ex. There you go. We have all kinds of packages that'll fit your budget. So, yeah, come on over to booklocker.com and take a look at our deals. All right, Angela. Well, that's it. We're going to wrap it up. We thank everybody for listening.
Thank you, everybody, and we'll see you next week. You'll hear us next week.
That's another thing. Writersweekly.com/podcast, and you can listen to all the episodes and this
right,
one.
The links to all of them there, and they're also on
links,
YouTube. So.
And it'll also contain links to anything that we discuss here that we said we'll post a link. So
right.
writersweekly.com/podcast. And if you're listening to us on any of the platforms that allow you to give us a 5-star rating and you like what we're talking about, go ahead and click that 5-star rating. Help us out here.
We'd appreciate it.
We're trying to grow this, and we're having a lot of fun doing it. So help us out. 5 stars. Thank you very much for listening. Y'all have a great week.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.